Welcome to the first episode of the Jervis Bay Weekend podcast. My name's Sam, and I'm the editor of the lifestyle magazine jervisbayweekend.com.au. Every Thursday afternoon, I'll be sharing fresh interviews with some of our region's most interesting people to go behind the scenes with the chefs and authors, artists, musicians, event organisers, and local business innovators right here in our coastal villages. Before we dive into today's lineup, I want to thank two local organisations for sponsoring this episode. Firstly, Greenhouse is Huskisson's premier co-working space. If you're looking to escape the monotony of working from home for a day or a week, or you need to hire a professional meeting room, or you want to host a standout event, Greenhouse has you covered. Thanks to Greenhouse for providing us with a meeting room to record these interviews. We're also supported by the Arts Muster Festival, returning to Huskisson this August with a full program of cultural events from the 27th to the 30th, designed to spark your creativity. Today, we're unpacking the stories behind three incredible upcoming events. We sit down with Chef Angie Prendergast-Skeets to talk about a brand new fruity festival. We get a sneak peek at an immersive art and music collaboration with musician Scott Gillespie, and we dive into local history with Dr. Rose Searby. First up, there's a brand new festival hitting the South Coast this winter, celebrating everything bright, tart and local. Citrus Fest is taking over Kangaroo Valley from Friday 31st of July to Sunday the 2nd of August. I chatted with renowned chef Angie Prendergast-Skeets from the Valley Table to find out the inspiration for the festival, what we can expect, and why it's the perfect winter escape. Here's our conversation. It's a familiar sight to those of us on the South Coast, that citrus trees absolutely groaning under the weight of their bright, ripe fruit. And if you've ever regretted wasting too much fruit or wondered what to do with it all, we've got Chef Angie Prendergast-Skeets here to answer all the questions that you need to know. And she's packaged them up in a brand new three-day event called Citrus Fest, which is happening in Kangaroo Valley on the first weekend in August. So, Angie, tell me what inspired you to create Citrus Fest.
Well, I suppose everyone in Kangaroo Valley grows citrus. It grows really well here, and not just Kangaroo Valley, of course, but across the South Coast. And everybody has the humble lemon tree, orange tree, and anyone that has one knows that they just all produce fruit same time and you don't know what to do with it all. So I guess that's where it was really born from, wanting to bring community together, celebrate the citrus plant, the citrus fruit, and share knowledge, delicious food, and really reducing the waste. That's sort of how the Citrus Fest was first born. It's really all about sharing skills, reducing waste, and strengthening our community. A lot of the workshops are around hands-on, you know, preserving or learning more about the citrus fruit.
Yes, I love that because this time of year I have been known to make mandarin cakes and lemon butter. So I'm all about how to handle your citrus.
Yes. Well, it's a pretty jam-packed festival. So starting on the 31st of July and then it's the 1st and 2nd of August. So it's 3 days. The Friday we kick off with a farm orchard tour. So we start off at Fire Mountain Permaculture on Kambawara Mountain. And James Robertson, who runs that particular farm, he's an incredible wealth of knowledge and he's going to be doing sort of practical pruning workshops and grafting demonstrations and really talking about, you know, caring for your citrus. So the second stop will be at an amazing permaculture farm in Upper River called Windurong. They will be talking about soil ecology and natural pest management techniques and a sort of building a resilient growing system. And then the last stop on that farm tour is Yarrowa Estate, and they actually grow citrus for some of Sydney's best restaurants. So it will be really interesting to see a sort of commercial citrus orchard there. And then that that evening, I'm running a dinner called Citrus Without Borders, and that's looking at all the unique citrus that grows around the world in various countries and bringing it all together in one delicious dinner.
Yes, I'm very tempted to come to that because preserved lemons, lemon zest. I mean, you can have lemon in or citrus really for three meals a day, can't you?
Oh, definitely. And this was a sort of feature, like we're going everywhere from Peru in South America to Thailand to Persia and Morocco and Italy and visiting all of these countries. And, you know, each country has its own unique variety of citrus. And that's really what we want to highlight, that it's such a diverse plant. And you can, you know, it comes up in so many different cuisines.
Yeah, absolutely. And on the program, you've even got some kids events that sound pretty good to me. What's a lemon battery?
So the Sunday morning of the festival, we're doing a kids workshop, a kids craft workshop. And not a lot of people know this, but you can build a battery using lemons. So the acid in the lemon juice. So the kids will learn how to make batteries using lemons. Lemons and wires, and that's about it really. And they're going to be able to light up a little clock and light up some little LED lights, and then they'll also be doing for the smaller kids citrus stamps and wreath making as well. That'll be a fantastic morning for the kids to get in and have some fun with crafts.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I think can a big kid come to that?
Yes, for sure. The tickets actually include, like, you know, they're for you and a child, but, you know, come along just on your own.
Sounds fantastic. You mentioned before that different cultures and different cuisines around the world have their own uses for citrus, but citrus really is a pretty hard-working utility fruit, isn't it? Because you can get the zest, the juice, the oil, the fragrance. You've got some other events happening that are not just around food and drink.
Yeah, so the preserving day, which is going to be a big day on the Saturday with support from our local agricultural show, is a big preserving day. So yes, there's an element of like preserving to make preserved lemons or marmalades and jams, but we want to introduce people, exactly as you're saying, into this idea that you can use citrus fruit for other purposes. So we're going to be making natural cleaning products, skincare products as well, and we're going to show people how to distill essential oils, which will be really interesting, because the benefit of some of this stuff is if you've got a lemon tree and the birds have attacked it or a possum's got in and you've still got some kind of usable fruit but it's not really edible anymore, then make cleaning products, you know, natural cleaning products, and all we need for that is often just lemons. So that'll be a really interesting workshop there.
That's an absolutely brilliant idea, and I love the way you've involved the whole community in this festival. What's been the response from locals?
Yeah, everybody loves it. Everybody's jumping on board. We've got a lot of the town decorating their shops and businesses with lemons and putting lemon, you know, citrus specials on their menus. There's even going to be, as part of the event, there's going to be a big trivia night on the Saturday. So even if you don't even like lemons, you can come along to the trivia event. And that's a bit of a community input, because a lot of people have sent us like funny trivia questions they've got. So that'll be a really fun night out.
Well, I won't ask you any of those questions because I don't want anyone to cheat. but food waste is a serious issue, and I think something that's been a long passion project of yours to try and minimise food waste, and this kind of feeds into that for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've been working kind of in the sustainability area for, you know, 15 years now, and I'm really passionate about reducing food waste, but also about a community coming together around this, you know, around one cause, which is the sustainable nature of making sure we use our whole crop and nothing gets wasted. So we're actually bringing in the whole community to donate citrus. So we've already got bins and bins and bins full of citrus fruit that people are donating, which is literally just excess from their trees. And all of that at the end of the festival, whatever doesn't get used, we're going to donate onto Salt Care.
Oh, that's absolutely marvellous. Food waste is a serious issue, but this is such a fun way to make a small difference and it's right here in our communities on the South Coast. Tickets to the flagship event, Citrus Without Borders. The dinner is $95, which includes a booking fee. The Kids Craft and Discovery Workshop is $24 with a booking fee, and you can see the full program online at citrusfest.au. Thank you very much, Angie. I hope it goes really well.
Yeah, we hope so, even if, you know, we just want to get everyone around in our community together to celebrate, you know, celebrate citrus. And even though it's cold, we can all come together and have a really good time.
Marvellous. I'll see you there. What an exciting addition to our regional festival calendar. Now looking ahead to late August, the Arts Muster Festival is bringing some truly innovative cultural events to the coast. One of the standouts is happening on the evening of Friday the 28th of August, called Mindscapes and Soundscapes. It's a unique experience where participants create abstract art in direct response to live sonic stimuli. I caught up with multi-instrumental musician, composer and improv artist Scott Gillespie to talk about how this fascinating collaboration will come to life. We're here today with musician, multi-instrumental musician, composer and artist Scott Gillespie, who is collaborating with Arts Muster on an event that's billed as Mindscapes and Soundscapes, where the participants will be making abstract art in response to sonic stimulus. Hi Scott, thanks for joining us today. What is a soundscape? I mean, it's not just music, and you're a musician, but you sculpt with sound. So what does the word soundscape mean? How do we understand that?
The way I understand it is it's more textural rather than harmonic or melodic. Ambient music's a good example.
Right, so you can't sing along with it. It doesn't have a defined melody. It's more of a evoking feelings,
yes.
Emotions.
Moods. Emotions, yeah.
And how do you create that in a sound context?
It's a feel thing, you know.
You do it instinctively.
Yeah, it's instinctively. So it's going with the feeling, and there'll be a kind of vibe in the room, and kind of just go with that, yeah.
So do you like doing that live as well, creating soundscapes?
Yes, I like doing it live, yeah.
And what are you looking for from the people in the room with you?
Not necessarily looking for anything. It's just more a case of just kind of tuning into where people are at and maybe and affecting the way people are feeling in the room.
Can you see them changing when to the sounds that you're making? Or responding?
Yeah, I can see response, but it's still on a feel level. It's not so much what people are doing or seeing what they're doing. It can be just a feeling.
Yeah, that's really cool. You are a collector of instruments and objects that make sounds and all kinds of weird and wonderful pieces of equipment. I've had a little peek inside of your collection. Can you give us a bit of an insight into the collection? What's in it?
Oh, lots of guitars, bass guitars, mandolins, lots of stringed instruments. That's sort of my thing. There's lots of percussion as well. I've got a drum kit, I've got a cello, I've got dulcimers, zithers, and a studio as well, full of all the plugins and keyboards and bits and pieces you can get.
And do you play those instruments often? You obviously play your guitar very often.
Yeah.
How much do you get the other bits and pieces out?
I don't play them that often, but they're kind of there. So it's like a tool shop rather than if I'm working on something, I might want to just grab something randomly and play with that.
So do you sample some of those?
Yeah, I sample them. Sometimes I sample them. Sometimes I just play them. If I've got a track and I want something that's just something a bit different and a bit off the cuff, sometimes you can premeditate composition a bit too much, and it's to bring in that kind of edgy sort of... how do I explain it? It's... It just brings in the magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how did you get started on the collection? It's obviously something you've built up over time.
Yeah. I suppose it's going on holiday and stuff like that and finding strange percussion. I remember going to Thailand and coming back with a whole heap of gongs and strange stringed instruments and, yeah, bits and pieces. Yeah, whenever I go somewhere, I always try and bring something back.
A unique souvenir.
Yeah, but even though I might just be in an op shop and I might find something that makes a noise that sounds cool.
And have you made any instruments yourself?
I suppose I've found things like old tubs and cans and bits and pieces that I'll sample. Yeah, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
And how did you get started as a musician?
How did I get started? Well, I was always really into music as a child. My parents were really into music, so they were always the radio was on all day in the house. Music was just a part of my life. And then I started buying records when I was about 10 or 11. And I think I was around about 15 or 16 when my dad brought a guitar home and I went, oh, you can play music. And it hadn't really dawned on me. So, yeah, I picked it up and started working things out and kind of begun there.
So I guess that's the roots of your experimentation.
Yes.
Comes from a bit of self-taught guitar from
yeah,
an
yeah.
early age, but you went on to study music as well, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Adelaide Uni and afters as well. Yeah, and studied. Adelaide was, yeah, real study. It was a bachelor of a bachelor of music.
Yeah.
Yeah, and my major was music technology.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I had to do either jazz or classical. And at the time, I thought jazz was really uncool, so I kind of did classical, and I didn't have any grades or anything. I hadn't studied, and I didn't know how to read, so I had to kind of really just buck up and catch up with everybody else. Yeah, but it was fascinating. There was lots of music that I got introduced to, like 20th century music, which was eye-opening and just different ways of approaching composition, like John Cage or the minimalist composers, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, some of the atonal stuff.
Yeah,
or
the atonal.
Yeah, some
yeah.
of the, yeah, there's some pretty random experimental stuff from the classical repertoire of the mid-20th century,
yeah.
isn't there?
Yeah.
Some of it's really hard to listen to.
it is. But then again, once you listen to it, you kind of get used to it, and it's like, that makes sense. I found once I started listening to it, and I got really into it, especially the kind of chromatic stuff. And I like the fact that it was just breaking all the rules.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you've been back in the recording studio again this week.
Mm.
What are you working on?
I'm working on a song that's about 30 years old that has always been hanging around, and I decided I'm going to do a proper recording of this song. So I've just been doing the basic tracks for that, like drums and bass, and then as I started doing the guitars last night, and I just started getting all this new harmonic confirmation coming in for the, it was just changed it completely into something else.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. That's exciting that it's alive, even though it's decades.
Yeah. It's like the basic thing itself. I mean, I recorded it. I just happened to have the tape recorder playing at the time, and I just came out, and the arrangement, the way it came out, it was just guitar and singing, and that arrangement I've always kept it exactly the same. And obviously the words were not all fully formed, but then over the years I've just kind of tweaked it here and there, and I've got it the words the way I want it. And it's kind of been sitting there in that form for a while, and this week I just started working on it, and then it's just morphed into something completely new. I love that when that happens.
And I think we can all understand the relationship between music and words because of song lyrics and what have you, but what do you think is the relationship between music or soundscapes and visual arts?
I'd say there's a close relationship, especially with abstract art, you know, it's like, because it's textures and different colours and fields of colour, and the music's like that as well.
So this Arts Muster event that you are collaborating on, it's called Mindscapes and Soundscapes. It's on Friday the 28th of August as part of a festival of 19 events that are all designed and encourage people to roll up their sleeves and create. So what do you think people can expect to hear from you at Mindscapes and Soundscapes? What kind of vibe do you think you'll be bringing on the night?
Well, I find it's best not to expect anything. It's best just to kind of go in and just kind of go for it and see what happens. I might have a couple of things prepared. It just depends. If I'm feeling it, and if something comes to me, I'll go, oh yeah, I'll play that. But otherwise, I'll just play whatever I feel like playing at the time.
Well, I think that sounds really exciting. Tickets to that event are now available for $90 at artsmuster.com.au. That includes music by Scott, also catering, and art materials will be supplied as well. So I can't wait to see you there, Scott. That sounds perfect for anyone looking to unleash their creative freedom. Finally today, an event with an interesting connection to Jervis Bay. This year marks the 10th anniversary of Melbourne writer Kate Mildenhall's debut novel. Skylarking is a fictionalised story that follows the families of the lighthouse keepers at Cape St George on Jervis Bay's southern headland. To celebrate, historian Dr Rose Searby is hosting an exclusive author talk with Kate at the Jervis Bay Maritime Museum on July 23rd. I caught up with Rose to ask her what it's all about. I'm speaking with Australian environmental and cultural historian Dr. Rose Searby, who is hosting an interesting author talk coming up soon that has close connections to the maritime past of Jervis Bay. Rose, tell us about the event.
Good morning, Sam. Yes, thank you. We've got a very exciting event coming up at the Jervis Bay Maritime Museum on July the 23rd. It's an evening with author Kate Mildenhall, who is a Melbourne author, but we've adopted her into the Shoalhaven because she loves the region and has been coming here for a very long time. And in fact, the book that I'll be talking to her about, Skylarking, takes place at Cape St George in our region. And so Kate is coming up for the 10th anniversary of the book to talk about the book, but also what's gone on in the 10 years since the publication of the book, which is an exciting epilogue to the story.
Yes, well, I can't wait to find out what new facts and mysteries you've uncovered in the 10 years. So I understand you are also in the final stages of writing a novel. How's it been for you switching from writing non-fiction books to writing fiction?
It's been freeing, Sam. Freedom from the historical sources in order to write fiction is quite an amazing experience. I've always wanted to write fiction and finally had the opportunity to do it. But, well, there's no but about it. But my fiction will always be based on historical events. And because in history there are stories, and history is about stories, which, you know, we'll hear about with the Skylarking event on July the 23rd. And equally, my fiction is based on history. It's not an historical fiction like Kate's book, but it is based on historical events. And in history, we find stories, and that's the beauty about it.
Yeah, well, why are we so fascinated with making stories out of history? Is it some urge to understand historical events in a more contemporary format, or why are we so obsessed with the stories behind history?
Well, I think they're, you know, they're ultimately about us, aren't they? I mean, historical events, no matter how long ago they were, are based in human experiences or living experiences of living, breathing beings, whether it's plants or animals. And as it's human nature to want to understand our own experiences in the world and through the world. And I think the stories that we create, of course, you know, narratives are collective, so they can be collectively understood by communities and created by communities. But they're an important way of seeing the world and understanding the world.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the environment plays a big part in not just Kate's book, but also in our understanding of storytelling as well. And the lighthouse setting for Kate's book and what you two will be talking about at this event is there's something about lighthouses, isn't there? I mean, especially those 19th century lighthouses and the lighthouse keepers' families, they're kind of evoke gothic and dark stories, don't they? I've visited a few interesting lighthouses around the world and I find them incredibly fascinating, and the lighthouse, or the ruined lighthouse out at Cape St George, is no exception, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. And I, you know, I really do believe, and this is something that without giving away any secrets of what will be happening at the event, you know, I think lighthouses have always intrigued, as you say, wherever they are, all over the world. And, you know, on the east coast of Australia, the majority of the population live on the coast, and so we are surrounded by lighthouses. But the lighthouses have, I think, what, you know, an outer and inner life. We see the function of their outer life, you know, from the sea, and then their role of warning boats and ships of what is there, the coastline. But there's an inner life, isn't there? Just as you say, you know, it's about people, it's about communities, it's about families who live there, it's about survival, wilderness, extremes. And I think that's always been really evocative in the imagination of Australians in particular. You know, that's what we'll be tapping into through skylarking and by talking to Kate too.
Yes, and I think anyone who hasn't done the walk out to Cape St George will be absolutely fascinated to go out and have a look for themselves, I think.
Yes, and in fact, I'm about to go out again next weekend. It's something that you can do time and time again, and you always experience something different. And, you know, the environment brings different feelings, different weathers, different experiences, and it's a great walk to do and a great place to be.
It is a fantastic walk out there and incredible views as well, which you would expect from a lighthouse.
Yes. And reading Skylarking, Kate manages to tap into those sort of the environmental conditions and the views and the extremes of the feeling of the site, where she has been numerous times too.
Yes, I think as a young girl growing up in that sort of environment in the late 19th century, it would have been absolutely a very challenging way to grow up. But I suppose if you didn't know any better, it would form you into a unique human being.
Yeah, and there's freedom in it too, isn't there? There's freedom in that sort of world. And, you know, I think particularly in the 19th century, the role of women, and but to be a teenage girl growing up there would have been an incredible experience. And Kate manages to, I mean, part of the role of history and the writing of historical fiction is that what's so wonderful about the genre is that, you know, the sources don't always tell us about what people feel, how people feel. And so fiction and based on historical events allows us to get into the mind of people. And in this case, Kate's done that so well in this book. And that's partly also what we'll be talking about.
Yeah, well, I can't wait to come along. Tickets to the author talk between Rose and Kate, $20, and that includes a drink and refreshments, and that's on the evening of Thursday, July 23rd at the Jervis Bay Maritime Museum. Thanks, Rose, for giving us a sense of what we can expect at this event, and also we know that books will be available to buy on the night, thanks to Boo Book on Owen.
Yes, absolutely. And not only will Skylarking be available to buy, but Kate's other books too. She's a prolific author, and she has a number of wonderful other books out. And the fabulous Boo Book on Owen, our local bookshop in Huskisson, is working with the museum on the event. And, you know, they have been huge supporters of writers, and they are incredible women who work there. And so we thank them too for the event and providing the books.
Yeah.
So come along at 5:30, have a drink first, and look forward to seeing you there, Sam.
Yeah, wonderful. And hopefully you and I will get to do this again sometime soon about your own book.
Wouldn't that be great? I very much look forward to it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Sam.
Thank you to Rose, Scott and Angie for being the guests on our first podcast for Jervis Bay Weekend. You can find ticket links and full details for all of these events on our website, jervisbayweekend.com.au, where you can also subscribe to receive our weekly edition via email every Friday. Thanks again to our launch sponsors, Huskisson's co-working space Greenhouse and the Arts Muster Festival, coming to Huskisson at the end of August. We'll be back next Thursday afternoon with some fresh interviews. Until then, we hope our stories help you to make the most of your leisure time here in Jervis Bay.